gonna start. If you don't have the tape, just don't worry about them. But for those of you who do, the first page in front of you should say the pangs of cleansing. Okay? That should be the first page in front of you. The next page in front of you should have a number 9 on the left-hand side.
Wait.
Number 9, so check both sides.
Wait, this is confusing.
It is confusing. Figure this is an exercise to make sure everybody's up at 2:15 in the morning here. Page 264. The next page is page 268 with a 20 on the left-hand side. And the next page is totally in Hebrew. It says Rav Kook Orot HaKodesh. Okay? Is that
what are you missing? Grab me one, because I don't have it either. Okay, this is mine. And what else? I also need this one. And then I've got a whole set. Okay, there's extra copies this week for me.
Where's the last page? Total Hebrew page?
That one?
Okay, if you don't have, don't worry about it. If you don't have pages, we'll fill you in later, and we'll get you set up. But the most important thing is everybody will have some of the pages. We'll see those hakimos, it should be fine.
This is 1 and 3.
Okay.
Okay, so that's it.
Okay. I thought that a teacher, a friend, somebody who's been part of my family for a long time, Phil Chernofsky, the Rosh Hashiva of Shiva University, who's here, Rev Miller, I thought that it would be appropriate to discuss something that is really celebrates Hoshana Rabbah and Sukkot. And that is the joy of our relationship with God. It is not coincidental that we celebrate the holiday of Sukkot immediately after Yom Kippur. The Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Hutner, writes that the reason why Sukkot is immediately after Yom Kippur and not after the holiday of Pesach, when the Jewish people left Egypt and celebrated and began the desert odyssey in which there were these Sukkot, is because the Sukkot that happened immediately after Pesach were Sukkot that happened not because the Jewish people deserved it, but simply because they were necessary, some type of protective cover to protect Knesset Yisrael, to protect the Jewish people. That protective cover was lost with the Chet HaEgel, with the sin of the golden calf. It was then returned to the Jewish people. It was reintroduced to the Jewish people when the Jewish people did tshuva on the holiday of Yom Kippurim. When Moshe Rabbeinu prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and actually said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Lecheni na mesifracha, remove me from your book if you will not re-engage with the Jewish people," it was then that the Sukkot were once again visited upon Knesset Yisrael. This new rendezvous between God and the Jewish people, which is celebrated by the holiday of Sukkot, is a rendezvous that was established not by happenstance, but by the Jewish people doing tshuva, by re-engaging with God. It is for that reason that the holiday of Sukkot, the Sukkah, which celebrates the unbelievable capacity to be protected by God, by all different external stimuli that can sometimes challenge us, both as individuals and as a community, that it's celebrated in a post-Yom Kippur model as an extension of Yom HaKippurim. That's why Hoshana Rabbah, in a few hours, the Chazan will daven with a kittel. That's why Simchat Beit HaShoeva, as the Gemara and Sukkot tells us, the songs focused on the notion of tshuva, because there is a renewal, a re-engagement with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that happens on Sukkot. Unlike the fear aspect that happens on Yom HaKippurim, an aspect that is a true component of a relationship to God, one in which we realize that everything is in the hands of God, and there is this dialectic that while we realize that we have to do our own hishtadlus, we have to be proactive in shaping our destiny, we realize that ultimately our destiny is within the hands of God, and there's a fear factor, so to say, in our relationship to God on Yom Kippurim, even though Yom HaKippurim has a joyous component to it. It is not by coincidence that in Yom HaKippurim, the Rambam, Maimonides, does not list Yom HaKippurim with the other fast days, which are mourning fast days. But Yom HaKippurim is learned, the fasting and all the laws of Yom HaKippurim are learned by the word Shabbat Shabbaton. It is the quintessential Shabbos experience. It is the ultimate Shabbos experience. It is a spiritual renewal with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Yom HaKippurim. It's not coincidental that on a day of Yom HaKippurim, we celebrate our completeness by, in the afternoon of Yom HaKippurim, there was this major event in which both young men and young women who were not yet married would participate in an event that happened in walking distance from here, Gehenom, and they would be involved in a celebration to try to achieve Shleimus. It's for that reason we learn and we read all the sexual norms and mores on Yom Kippurim. So Yom Kippur is a day of joy, but that joy has an awe factor to it. Sukkot is a day of v'samachta v'chagecha. It is the ultimate chag of simcha. It celebrates the joyous component of our relationship to God. The sources that we're going to share tonight really highlight that idea of simcha, of the joyous relationship to have with God. I must admit that these sources in front of you are my own personal odyssey in trying to find a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu that obviously has a fear component to it, but has equally a component to it which celebrates the idea that not only are we in search of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in search of a relationship with us. We're partners with God. We say at the end of each davening, we're involved in Tikkun Olam. And in order to, we complete God's world. And in order to be in a partnership with God, partners need each other. And I'd like to share with you some ideas of that. The hour is late. We're not going to be able to do all of those ideas inside. And we started a little bit late. I'm just trying to see how much time I have here. We started a little bit late. So I want to share with you the ideas that are mentioned here with the recognition that these sources are here for you to learn on your own. Most of them are in English. The first source, which is the major source, which celebrates this idea of joy, we're going to work backwards from this source. Rav Kook, in this unbelievable source, which if it wasn't written by Rav Kook, it would be impossible for me to articulate such a vision. Rav Kook speaks about the holiness behind the value of atheism. What is the beauty of atheism? What is the holiness of atheism? And Rav Kook explains the following. Atheism, says Rav Kook, a proactive response in not believing in God was a response by God to a religion which began to have icons. That icon that was idolatrous was a recognition that when one looked at the name of God as the God of anger and the God of fear, that was a form of idolatry. That when one looks at God as the God of punishment, the God of fear, the God of anger, and looks at God from that perspective, that itself is a form of idol worship. Rav Kook says the following. Rav Kook says that throughout the generations, religion became contaminated. That names of God were never meant to celebrate the entire odyssey of who God is, but rather, like in mathematics, sometimes you can have pointers. And Mr. Chernofsky was my math tutor many years ago, when I was failing math. He helped me out several times. And I passed because of him. And math in computer architecture, sometimes you have an idea that you have pointers to ideas through mathematics. There is in philosophy the notion of language, simply celebrating the idea that language does not represent an entity on its own. There's a very famous philosopher, his name is Kenneth Burke. Kenneth Burke, who's a secular philosopher, celebrates the same ideas that Rav Kook represents here. What Burke says is that language is simply just a pointer to an idea or a pointer to an object. It does not represent the object in its totality. When I say that this is a chair, this is a chair, it does not mean that the word chair represents something. And if we closed our eyes, which hopefully we shouldn't do right now, because we might not open them again, if we say the word chair, we might conjure up different definitions of what a chair is. For some, it's a more lazy type of chair. For others, it's a more office rigid chair. But the idea is a chair, the word chair does not represent an object. It just represents an object. It doesn't mean the object. It doesn't define the object. If you speak to a group of Chinamen, and you say the word chair, they won't know what it means. It's a bunch of syllables that simply point to something that we figure in our minds. Rav Kook says that when you speak about God, the names of God are like the clothing of God, or like for our own clothing. Our own clothing defines who we are at that moment, right? No one would expect me to come here in jeans and a t-shirt, right? It wouldn't be an appropriate garb to wear.
It is Israel, whatever.
I need to own jeans and a t-shirt first. But the bottom line is that, you know, that might be appropriate for a different venue. Clothing sometimes defines who you are at the moment, but it doesn't totally represent you. It shouldn't really define who you are. Rav Kook says the problem that happened in religion was the following. That people looked at God, and in order to realize that they were limited, that they were finite, they looked at God as the God of anger and the God of fear. And any true spiritual soul, says Rav Kook, any soul that had any search for a relationship with God could not handle such a relationship. That by finding a relationship to God and realizing how finite we are and how infinite God is, that our soul became depressed. Rav Kook said, and what happened was there were a group of spiritual personalities that were so spiritual that they reflected against that to the point in which what happened was that they were involved in an act of atheism. Atheism represents religion going awry. Religion becoming that we only define our relationship to God through fear. That we are finite because God is all-powerful. That God can be this unbelievable major force that can allow us to live or allow us to die. Rav Kook says that's not the way we're supposed to present our relationship to God. Our relationship to God should be that we realize that we are finite and God is infinite. And that should not cause a depression within our soul, but rather a certain euphoria. When you travel, today I took a tour with my children. We went through, on jeeps, through the Judean desert. You go through Midbar Yehuda, and you see the beauty of Midbar Yehuda. You feel finite. But that recognizing that you're finite in that environment does not create a depression. It creates a certain euphoria because you feel you're part of this unbelievable world. You realize how finite you are. But that finite does not create depression. That finite creates joy and jubilation. Rav Kook says that the entire experience of atheism was a response to a search for a relationship to God that was based that God is the God of punishment. That our relationship to God is only one of fear. But a true relationship to God, true Yiras Shamayim, is not defined by fearing God. But the true Yiras Shamayim, true, in quotes, fear of God, the ultimate relationship to God, is a relationship in which one feels the love of God. A true spiritual soul, says Rav Kook, cannot handle a relationship with God that is predicated just on fear. It depresses the soul. It causes a certain darkness within one's spirituality, and therefore there was a movement to run away from that. And the holiest of holy souls created atheism as a response to the perverseness of a religion that defined a relationship with God based on fear. God's going to hurt you. God's going to punish you. You don't do this mitzvah, you're in trouble. God's going to strike you down. That's not what Judaism is about. Judaism is about finding a relationship with God in which one feels God's hand on one's frail shoulder. That one feels a certain euphoria when one realizes the greatness of the world around us. And atheism was a response to that. Those are the pages that we find on page 261 and through page 269. And if you can look at the pieces, I just want to point out to you that you see 1, 2, and 3, and on the other sides you find 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All of these represent, you look at this, for example, you look at 7 for a second. There is, which is on the first page, the second side. There is no anguish or depression in such loneliness, but pleasure and pride, a sense of inner power adorned by every kind of beauty. That's when we realize the majesty of God, and we realize that we are finite, but we realize the beauty of the world around us. But when we have a different type of relationship to God, one that is based on anger, it confuses the spirit. And if you turn to the next page, page 264, you'll see by 13, it confuses everyone who believes in it, depresses his spirit, blunts his feelings, inhibits the assertions of his sensibility, and uproots the divine glory in his soul. 14, every sensitive spirit must turn his mind away from this. It's an unrefined understanding of Judaism. And therefore, by 17, on page 265, where I have the 17, the violence of atheism will cleanse away the dross that accumulated in the lower levels of religious faith. Atheism has a powerful, positive punch to cause us to reevaluate what true religion is about. Whoever recognizes the essence of atheism from this perspective embraces the positive element in it and traces this back to its origin in holiness. That's what Rav Kook says. This idea is highlighted also on page 268 and on page 269, and I ask you to read it on your own. This idea of the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu being celebrating this unbelievable love with God is found also in the sources that I have in front of you on page, what's on the bottom of here, page 6. Each source is highlighted in English. Likutei Torah, the Maggid of Mezrich, the B'nai Yisachar, etc. And I would like to share with you the ideas that are being highlighted here. First of all, Likutei Torah. Likutei Torah is highlighting that the relationship that we celebrate, the loving relationship that we celebrate between man and woman, Ish and Isha, that relationship is also known in the relationship between God and the Jewish people. That within the relationship between God and the Jewish people, God and the Jewish people are also known as man and woman. All of Shir HaShirim is all about the love, not between two human beings, a man and a woman, but the lovers, in this case, in Shir HaShirim, is God and the Jewish people. Sometimes in Shir HaShirim, which is known as the Holies of Holy, the ultimate song, sometimes in Shir HaShirim, it is God that is the feminine, and we, the Jewish people, are the male. We pursue HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And sometimes it is God that is the masculine, and we are the feminine, and God is pursuing us. It is the idea that there is a relationship between God and the Jewish people that is celebrated in the love relationship that we see between a husband and wife. This idea is what Shabbos is all about. The whole idea behind Shabbos is when you have the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people re-engage in a loving relationship. Shalom Aleichem, we welcome in the angels. But once the angels come, we say Seischem Shalom. We say goodbye to the angels. Because what do the angels do? They bring the Spirit of God into our home. But once they bring the Spirit of God into our home, we tell the angels goodbye. We don't need a third party. Seischem Shalom. We don't need a third party. Because Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbos is about the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. Shabbos is about the renewal of this intimate relationship between God and the Jewish people. Shabbos celebrates the idea that the Jewish people and God don't have a relationship that is predicated on fear, but have a relationship that is predicated on a marriage. There's a love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. There is this idea that we begin Shabbos by lighting two candles. Those two candles represent, one represents the Jewish people, and one represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But by the end of Shabbos, those two candles become one in Havdalah. The whole idea, when we say Kabbalat Shabbat, and we welcome in the Spirit of God, the whole idea of having two nigunim as part of the Chadodi represents because there are two personalities involved in Shabbat. Those two personalities are who? God and the Jewish people. In fact, there's an unbelievable idea that is highlighted by the B'nai Yisraschar. The B'nai Yisraschar quotes a Gemara in Yevamos. It's the third source on the page. The B'nai Yisraschar says that when a man and a woman, when a husband changes his job profession, that's not what this Gemara says, I'm just giving a little bit of an introduction. When the husband changes his profession so that he is away from the house longer, he has to ask his wife permission. Because of the lack of intimacy that being away from the house longer will cause. And the Gemara says that before a husband goes on a long business trip, he has to have a night of intimacy with the spouse. Chayav Adam Lifkod, says the Gemara. Chayav Adam Lifkod is Ishto B'Shah Shehu Yotze L'Derech. A man has to have a moment of intimacy with his wife before he goes on the way. So the B'nai Yisraschar uses this Gemara to explain an unbelievable Midrash. The Midrash says that when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and they opened the Kodesh Kedasha, they saw the Kruvim. What were the Kruvim doing? Anyone? What were the Kruvim doing?
They were hugging
each other. Does that make any sense at the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? What were the Kruvim supposed to represent? What were they supposed to represent?
God and Israel.
God and Israel, the relationship. It wasn't too good at the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. It wasn't at its top pinnacle place, right? So the Kruvim shouldn't have been hugging. They shouldn't have been looking at each other. But yet, the Midrash tells us that the Kruvim were in a state of embrace. So the B'nai Yisraschar says, how can it be that the Kruvim were in a state of embrace as the Beit HaMikdash was going up in smoke? And the B'nai Yisraschar says the following. Based on the Gemara that says before a husband goes on a long journey in which he is separated from his wife, he must have a night of intimacy. He must have a moment of intimacy. That explains the Medrash. The Medrash says that the Kruvim were in a state of embrace because before the Jewish people were going to be exiled from God's land, from the palace of the king, there had to be that moment of embrace. Because the moment of embrace is necessary between the two that are married, God and the Jewish people, before they are going to have some type of exile experience. Before one is going to go on a journey for many years. It doesn't mean that God was not with us in the diaspora. We know that there is a notion of Shechinta Begaluta, that God was with us in the diaspora. But the relationship had been compromised because of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. One had traveled away. And if you're going to travel, if the husband and wife are going to travel away, the halacha is that there must be a night of intimacy prior to that, to the traveling. And therefore, prior to the full destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, The Kruvim were in a state of embrace to celebrate the relationship between God and the Jewish people, to celebrate the idea that the relationship between God and the Jewish people is like a relationship between husband and wife. And that's the beauty of the relationship. It is not a relationship based on fear. It is a relationship based on love. It is a relationship that I find my wholeness when I'm involved in mitzvahs. And at the same time that I find my wholeness when I'm involved in mitzvot, I am God's salesperson in this world because I'm involved in tikkun olam. When I carry myself appropriately in the business environment, when I carry myself appropriately when I interact with my spouse and when I interact with my friends, I celebrate the ideas of God. When I'm involved in chesed, I am a person that is imitating God in this world. I am God's agent. I'm an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So much so that what is said on the last source, the Maggid of Nesrich, says, Kishetzarech Levakesh, and by the way, what I just said is source number 3. Kishetzarech Levakesh Eza Davar Mehabari Yisbarach. When one wants to ask a Kaddish Baruch Hu for something, one wants to pray to God. Yachshov She Nishmato, one should realize that one's soul, Hu Eiver Min Hashchina, that our soul is a piece of God. Kavyachol Kitipa V'Nayam, like a drop in the ocean. We are an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The peace of our soul that is in us is an extension of God. And when we pray, we should pray to God in a way in which we say to God that it is the peace of you, God, that we want to help develop within this world. This idea is so potent and powerful in the thoughts of Rav Kook that the final page of our handout, which is the most complicated of the pages, which is only in Hebrew, is such an important message that, once again, it could not be said if it wasn't written by somebody of the stature of Rav Kook. And I'm going to say it outside, and we'll maybe we'll read a piece of it inside. Okay. So if you haven't been listening heretofore, just listen to this piece, and it'll be sufficient. Okay? Rav Kook says the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shalem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is complete. That's the definition of God. God is complete. But, says Rav Kook, something that is complete and that is whole, something that is perfect, has to be also in a state of growth. If something is not in a state of constant growth, then by definition it has a weakness. So Rav Kook says, is God in a state of growth or not? Now, I would say, how could you say God's in a state of growth? By definition, you're saying that there's something lacking in God if he's in a constant state of growth. Rav Kook says, no. Rav Kook says that the total definition of shleimut, a total definition of being whole and complete, is one in which even God is in a state of growth. How can it be that God is in a state of growth? Says Rav Kook. Any time in which we, the people in this room, are involved in developing ourselves to make ourselves more complete, since we are extensions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, since we have a piece of God in each and every one of us, there is not only growth in us, but by definition, if there's a piece of God in us, then there's actually growth in HaKadosh Baruch. that the shleimus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the wholeness of God, requires a component that is always in a state of growth. It is not a dimension of growth that suggests that there isn't wholeness already, but there's a state of growth in which the finite and the infinite can meet together, and the finite and the infinite, so to say, grows when the finite, that's each and every one of us in this room, perfects ourselves. And therefore, Rav Kook says that when we are in the state of searching for a relationship with God, of trying to perfect our relationship to God, which is what tonight is all about, our learning tonight, our coming together tonight, at the end of the tshuva period, is about asking ourselves the most important question. And that is, what are we doing in our lives to allow us to be in a state of growth, not in a state of just being stagnant? As we grow as individuals, as the peace of God inside of us grow, says Rav Kook, then also God grows. Because we create a holier space for God within this world. Because the definition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's shleimut, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wholeness, requires a component also of it being in a constant state of growth. And therefore, the message that I want to communicate to each and every one of you tonight, and I know it's very hard to share these ideas so late at night, but I think it's the most important message that we can have on a night like tonight that we come together and learning. The message that I want to share with you is that if you truly want to internalize what we're doing here tonight, it's about trying to find a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A relationship that is not based on fear. As Rav Kook says, a relationship totally based on fear creates depression and is a form of idolatry. But rather a relationship which celebrates the love, the recognition that God is infinite and we are finite, but the euphoria that comes with that. The idea that the relationship between God and the Jewish people is like the relationship between between a married man and woman, between a husband and wife. The idea of the embrace that is celebrated before the Jewish people went off on their own, went off in Galut, and there was a severing on some level of the relationship between God and the Jewish people. The idea that God is shalem, that God is complete, but in that shleimus, there is the potential for growth, and that potential for growth is achieved in God through when we grow ourselves. That's what Hoshana Rabbah is about. Hoshana Rabbah is about asking ourselves the last moment of the tshuva process, the moment that is found in Simcha. What are we going to do during the year to celebrate the joyous relationship that we can have with God? What changes are we going to make within our soul to recalibrate our compass so that we truly embrace God and truly make sure that we always feel that we have this loving relationship, that we can feel God in the highways and byways of our life. I want to wish everybody a Gemar Tov. It should be a time in which we use these moments to grow, and that as we are involved in Tefillah a little bit later, we can truly share the ideas and can communicate to God in a way in which we make the statement that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are looking this year to have a relationship with you in which we feel you every moment of our life, which we feel you, and through that we will grow, and we will also celebrate the idea that we are in search of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is desperately searching for a relationship with us. Thanks.